and welcome to In the Limelight, Vanity Fair's entertainment and pop culture podcast. I'm Josh Duboff, Vanity Fair senior writer, and I'm here today with Julie Miller, Vanity Fair senior holiday writer.
On In the Limelight, we analyze the ins and outs of pop culture, entertainment, and celebrity from the past week, from the Kardashians to Kate Middleton and everything in between.
We have a whole lot to get to this week, which is very exciting. We're going to talk about Beyonce and Brad Pitt surprise appearances. I feel like they're always making surprise appearances. At this point, it's just, you know, their regular appearances at a music festival. And we're also going to look at William, Kate, George, and Charlotte's royal tour through Europe.
We also have a very special segment featuring Lily Collins. I wasn't there. Josh and our producer, Jordan, traveled all the way to Midtown, which is essentially like Iceland, like trek to Midtown to talk to her. So far, they've teased the segment to me as saying that she has a really great royal story about meeting Diana and Charles. And crazy, can I say that she has an insane story about seeing Tilda Swinton taking out the trash? Can I say that?
Yeah, absolutely. So before we get to Lily, though, which, yes, you guys should definitely stick around for, let's talk about Beyonce and Brad, who have they even met? I feel like they exist in different universes, Beyonce and Brad Pitt, but I'm sure they've crossed paths at one point or another. But Beyonce, so what happened with Beyonce? She was at a Missy Elliott concert. I saw this on social media.
Okay, first of all, apparently there's a music festival in Los Angeles, which is where I am.
Yeah, where were you?
I was like in bed by 10 p.m. So, and already in the 5 weeks since Beyonce has given birth, she's been to more concerts than I have been to in like 5 calendar years. But so she went to the FYF festival, which is also where Brad Pitt made his cameo appearance. Josh, have you heard of the FYF festival?
Oh, wait. So I didn't even connect that this was the same festival that Brad and Beyonce. So they probably, if they hadn't already crossed paths, they probably did this weekend. Maybe not. I had never heard of this festival until this weekend when all these people I followed on Instagram were posting about it. The like LA influencers I follow, and it was like 8 people, and it was, you know, the captions would be actually most of them. I thought it was like a Frank Ocean concert because most of them seemed to be going to see Frank Ocean. I think he was like the headlining act, but I had no idea, and I didn't had no idea what FYF stands for. I still
it stands
don't.
For what does it fuck stand for? Yeah, Fest, which I don't know if we can even say.
Which
that
is also my tattoo, so that makes so much sense. I can't believe I missed it. Oh, I see Julia has written into the script. Did you know FYF stands for Fuck Yeah Fest? I did not. In the most shocking Julia reveal I've ever heard yet.
But so Beyonce stepped out to go to this Missy Elliott concert. I guess it was Missy's first concert in a decade.
Wait, that's wild.
I know.
Notwithstanding, she did the Super Bowl, though, with Katy Perry, remember?
Not counting that. Yeah. But we first heard of this, Josh and I, I'm assuming you... It was the same for you, Josh, when Missy posted an Instagram of herself with Solange and Beyonce. Beyonce, as always, is wearing sunglasses. She looks impeccable. And allow People magazine to describe for you what she's wearing. Josh, take it away with the passage.
I'm going to go to the passage from People. Bey wore a flowing denim poncho and tight black jeans, accessorizing the look with ankle-length black heels and silver-trimmed circular shades. And as Julie very rightfully points out, when in the history of the English language have the words flowing denim poncho appeared in sequence? She looked...
Right.
Like, but I feel like if anyone... If you had done a Mad Libs for me and been like, there's going to be a celebrity who was seen wearing a flowing denim poncho... I feel like Beyonce and maybe like Bella Hadid would be the two that would come to mind. So that actually sort of makes sense.
But also flowing denim. Denim seems like a very heavyweight material. But of course, if there's anyone who can make denim float, it's Beyonce. So once this Instagram kind of surfaced on the internet, the Beehive went crazy and they found all these videos people had taken at the concert, kind of scanning Missy's performance, but then scanning their camera over to just off stage, where you can see Beyonce kind of bobbing her head and dancing to the music. The most amazing video that surfaced that I saw, though, is one of Beyonce making her exit from the concert. It's amazing because who did she bring with her? Blue Ivy and Tina.
Wait, I had no idea she brought Tina.
Yes, so there's this video of Beyoncé leaving, and it is incredible for like 8 different reasons. The first of which is that Tina is wearing an amazing blue pantsuit, and as she walks out, you hear people yelling, "Tina! Tina!" You don't even hear people yelling at Beyoncé, you hear people yelling for Tina. Obviously, Tina has her cell phone in hand, and that screen is on, because she is ready to take a selfie at any moment. Also, Beyoncé did a complete costume change. So in the Instagram with Missy, she's wearing obviously this flowing denim poncho and like 8-inch heels. But when she makes her exit, she's wearing a white sweatsuit with the hood pulled way over her head, and she is on tennis shoes. And you just, you know it's her only because she's like has Blue Ivy's hand and is leading her out.
To bring two looks to a music festival is like a whole other level to me when you're not even performing.
Like you should just, not even performing.
And I can't wait to see the Instagrams that I feel like Beyoncé is going to post in like 8 weeks or whatever, whenever she does her, you know, 8 posts of the same outfit from 8 different angles. I feel like it always takes a few weeks for her to upload those onto her iCloud. But Tina being the star of the show is incredible. I also feel like Tina must be the most fun person to go to a music festival with, because you know she is going full throttle and just living for the moment, taking selfies, taking videos of the crowd that are grainy and haphazard. You know, those people that do that at festivals that are just filming everything. Tina never turns that camera phone off.
Never.
I feel like Blue Ivy probably like wanders away and Tina has no clue because she's so busy filming it all.
Beyoncé definitely does not let Tina babysit alone. Like, she needs Richard Lawson or someone else there, because Tina is like too transfixed by that cell phone and finding her light. I just love that Tina, Beyoncé, and Blue had this awesome like female Friday night, and I was probably in bed.
A great point here too, wait, you didn't mention this already, did you, that Solange and Missy are wearing the flat shoes but Beyoncé's wearing 8-inch heels?
No, I didn't mention that. In the Instagram, you can see that Solange is clearly wearing flats, as is Missy and Beyoncé, even though, like, she should get a pass for the next 3 years because she just gave birth to twins, has on these insane, like, stiletto boots. But apparently, she only put them on for the photo op.
I feel as though it would be so stressful to perform at a music festival if I knew Beyoncé was watching also.
That's true.
I mean, I feel like she doesn't show much. Like, it's very hard to read her, you know? She's very stoic. And so I feel as though I would... I mean, it seems like with the Missy Insta, she was showing Missy affection, but I don't know. I feel like anything she said, I would be like, in my head, she's thinking about how she, you know, I'm an amateur compared to her.
Oh my gosh, I know. If we were set to go on instead of Missy, someone would have had to give us like a pep talk. We would have had a personal breakdown.
I think right also beforehand. our other main objective here should be pulling off a flowing denim poncho look. We can outfit it out of the jean jackets we got at the white party.
Oh, that's perfect.
String two together into a poncho and we're set.
The next time Josh and I find a concert that starts at like 6 p.m. and go, we are both bringing duffel bags full of like a second clothing change.
Outfit change, denim.
Just very quick, yeah. Amazing Beyoncé notes. TMZ reported today that the house next door to Beyoncé's mansion is up for sale. So Josh, this is our chance
to move in.
We could be Beyoncé's next door neighbors.
Wait, I find that creepy almost, that it's out there that it's next door, because that means whoever's moving in is explicitly trying to get proximity to Beyoncé with their purchase. Probably.
Well, that's what the owners are doing, because I guess this house in Bel Air has been on the market for years.
Yeah.
But it has a problematic driveway. I guess the driveway goes downhill and is like very narrow. And I guess when you're paying millions and millions of dollars for a Bel Air mansion, you want it to be perfect. But so the owners are all about Beyoncé being the next door neighbor. I'm surprised there aren't like flyers out on telephone poles.
I would live in like Brie Larson room style, trapped in the closet, if it meant that I was like in the property next to Beyoncé. So
Josh would go out and get that Home Depot garden shed.
Yeah, lock me in the shed with Jacob Tremblay. Like, I'm fine as long as I get a glimpse of Beyoncé once every year.
I mean, that might be the creepiest visual we've ever summoned.
Yeah, that's not my best. That's not my finest hour. That's actually really funny. I wonder who's going to move in now. I wonder if it'll be another celebrity or if it will be a commoner.
I'm currently accepting donations so that Josh and I can move in and become Beyonce's next door neighbors, as was fated. We just need $18 million. We need to make a really good argument on Kickstarter. Okay, so Brad Pitt also knew about this FYF festival. Do you think Brad Pitt knows what it stands for, though?
No.
I bet money.
I bet Brad calls it the Fifth Fest. Like, he thinks it's the word.
Right, and Maddox just shakes his head.
Yeah, and he's like, Dad, go do another architecture assignment.
So, okay, Josh, do you want to set this one up?
No, I just have to say, I'm actually like need more explanation. I'm hoping you have it for me, because I watched this video. So Frank Ocean was performing. He sort of, in Brad Pitt's GQ style profile, which came out a month or two ago, which we talked about on the podcast, he mentioned that he'd been listening to a lot of Frank Ocean. And he said, I find this young man so special. Talk about getting to the raw truth. He's painfully honest. So he like praised him very openly. Then I made that sound like scandalous. Anyway, he praised him openly.
God forbid.
But it was kind of interesting that he was like so hip and knew cool music. So then at this festival over the weekend, Frank Ocean
After Brad Pitt said that to GQ, Frank Ocean performed in the UK wearing a t-shirt with Brad Pitt's face on it.
Wow.
So they haven't really talked, I don't think, but they've had this kind of like bromance.
It's almost like a romantic comedy. Anyway, like they're like shouting out to each other.
Okay, so Frank Ocean is on stage at FYF Festival. And he's sitting down and he starts performing his song Close to You. I love any performer who sings a song sitting down. That is like who I would be. But anyway, so he is performing his heart out, sitting down. And you know how at concerts, there's a huge screen behind you. All of a sudden, everybody in the audience sees this close up behind Frank Ocean as he's performing. And it's Brad Pitt, and he's standing there, and he's on his cell phone. He's listening to someone talking to him on the cell phone. Okay, so I was very confused because it just seemed like, did they pre-tape
this? That's what I thought, too.
But Brad Pitt was actually in front of the stage being filmed at that very moment. So Frank Ocean was kind of serenading him. I guess the concept was serenading him through the phone, so it was like Brad Pitt was listening to this performance.
And
does that make any sense to you?
And Spike Jonze was filming it, or is that different?
I did see Spike Jonze somewhere in the text, but I glazed right over that. It could have been. It seems very high concept.
Spike Jonze blindness. But I didn't understand what this is being. So they're filming it for. It's just why? I don't really get it. Why wasn't he just on stage with him? Or am I missing some conceptual art level here?
It's because art. This is how the Los Angeles Times described it. Frank Ocean was performing while behind him, Brad Pitt appeared in high definition close up on an enormous video screen. Pitt had a cell phone to his ear. His expression was sincere but inscrutable in the way movie stars are paid millions to perfect.
Oh my God, Pitt poetic.
I know. Pitt was there in the flesh, leaning against the lip of the stage as a cameraman fed carefully composed images to the screen behind Ocean. The actor stayed put, working those world-famous eyes until the end of Ocean's song. Then he took off without a word of acknowledgement from himself or the singer. So it's like Brad Pitt was just there and on the back of the screen, and then they finished the number and like didn't even reference it, is what I'm inferring.
Do we think Angelina has watched this video?
I don't think she can be bothered. But I feel like the kids have, and they have a lot of like detailed notes.
I feel like the kids loved this. I feel like the kids are into Frank Ocean. The kids in the general grandpa way of saying the kids, and Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie's kids. I think it's cool. I don't know. I guess it means he's out and about and not sulking in his cavern or whatever he indicated in the GQ profile.
I know. Things both you and John Voight have said. The kids are really into Frank Ocean.
What did you make of the whole thing? Did you think it was endearing? Did you think it was strange?
I thought it was confusing because, like you, I saw that image and didn't know what right. to think of it.
Right.
They could have made it a little bit more clear with the cell phones. Like, maybe Frank Ocean was performing into a cell phone. Like,
also, all the videos in front of him. All the videos I saw, or the video I saw, was very clearly just crowd, you know, an amateur filmed situation. Like, I kind of was surprised there wasn't a more professionally released video. Maybe that's the point. Or maybe that's what's coming right. when Spike Jonze releases his great opus or whatever. I don't know.
But it was a little bit exciting. It was kind of like Brad Pitt's, I guess, public return.
Yeah. Right? Maybe. Wasn't he at an award show or something? I feel like he was at an award show.
Oh, that sounds right.
He got like all that applause, remember, and people were pissed off.
Oh, okay. That makes sense.
But you're right. This is a more among the people appearance. You're right.
Among the people. I mean, I'm all for this Brad Pitt Frank Ocean bromance continuing in whatever form, whatever weird artsy form.
I don't know if anyone can hear. There's music actually playing in our studio right now, faintly in the background, which is very appropriate for this music festival segment.
It's like a pulsing vibe. It feels like we're trying to record a podcast next to a nightclub.
Which is basically what it is here in the old Condé Nast office. All right. I don't know. How are we going to transition this?
I mean, our conclusion to essentially this Pitt segment is just like question mark.
I think we said because art earlier. I feel like that also sums it up. our art criticism is really stellar. But it's also, oh my God, I didn't even make this connection. Brad and Frank visually being in separate places, but connecting on the phone is kind of like a metaphor for Julie and me doing this podcast.
Oh my gosh. See, we should have gotten this more than anyone.
You should perform at a festival, then I'll call you, but actually be there. I feel like we'll be able to pull that off. We have so much expertise.
I'm wearing the flowing denim poncho, though.
And I'm wearing the, I don't know, beyond, I'm wearing whatever Tina was wearing, the blue pantsuit. Across the ocean from Frank Ocean, I don't know. It's not the worst. It's not the best. The royal family went on a tour last week of the entire, what am I saying? Of Poland and Germany, not the entire country of Europe. Continent of Europe. Gosh, I am fumbling left and right, like Princess Charlotte did, because she fell at one point.
Impeccable.
Julie, save me before I just keep monologuing here and falling into one Brad Pitt after another.
So I'm really excited to hear what Josh has to say about this royal tour, because he is the royal expert on VanityFair.com. He does amazing write-ups of kind of every tour stop. If you haven't checked out his posts, you should now. He even captions slideshows. He captures like the best Charlotte and George expressions. But so
somehow they convinced me to do that. But I thought this was kind of my overall takeaway of this tour, and I don't know if you agree, I'm curious to hear, is that it was sort of a letdown a little bit. It was in Poland and Germany, which are, you know, interesting, very, you know, lots of cultural sites to see in both places, but
I wouldn't say like Europe's greatest hits, though. They're like the deep cuts.
Also, the India tour and the Australia, New Zealand tour, the Canada tour even, there were just so many sites every stop along the way for these great photo ops, like waterfall here, or, you know, glacier here, or, you know, Kate.
Animals.
Yeah, animals. Kate doing a Katniss-style arrow, bow and arrow demonstration. I feel like this tour didn't offer quite the same thrills. There was like a pretzel-making competition.
I know.
It was like
Germany and Poland did not like roll out the red carpets. There were no balloons. Didn't seem like a very stimulating tour for anyone like under the age of 40.
And but I also just felt a little bit. So George and Charlotte came, which was exciting, but we didn't see them very much. And the only times we did see them were at the airports.
We saw them like on tarmacs.
Right. Yeah. Airport is not exactly. It's not like we saw them at Shake Shack waiting in line, but they were at the tarmac at the beginning and at the end, and then at the middle when they flew from Poland to Germany. But there was no kind of fun events with them, or, you know, there was no petting zoo, or, you know, at some of the other tours there have been, or the tour in Canada when Charlotte and George went, they had a whole day where they were outside at this sort of garden party. So there was nothing kind of like with Charlotte was delighted by all these balloons. So from a George Charlotte standpoint, it was also kind of minimal photo ops, and so I feel like that was also a little bit of a disappointment.
I know, it's like George's lawyer had negotiated like really harsh terms for this trip. Like, fine, he will go to Germany and Poland, but only if this is like his only public appearance.
So like you don't get him for the like in country appearances, guys. His rate's too high at this point. And I thought that Kate had some good looks. That's never been my main excitement with Kate, but I also feel like when she really turns it out for some of her glitzy occasions, it's this like show-stopping situation. We didn't really have any looks like that.
I liked her in the lavender dress.
I loved the lavender dress. Yeah. What were your takeaways?
My highlights were I loved George looking very grumpy on the tarmac. I think when he arrived, he just looked over it and like he could not be bothered, which I feel like we've all felt at some certain times.
I know. I feel like when you get off a plane, that's not when you want to be photographed.
I loved Prince Charlotte curtsying. Did you see that little curtsy? Do you count that as a curtsy?
Yes. No, I thought that got picked up as her first curtsy, so we're going to call it her first curtsy.
She essentially like bobbed up and down, and they interpreted it as a curtsy after some foreign dignitary gave her a little bouquet, which I thought was really cute.
She pretty much uniformly, she was very much on her game the first two appearances. I feel like at the third, when they were going home, she kind of threw this little tantrum and tripped at one point. There's this video of it. George, and it was sort of reversed because George was in good spirits. And there's this amazing photo of George, which I can't get enough of from the final appearance.
How do you even describe it? Because it's like your new profile photo. I feel like it has to be. I know exactly which one you're talking
about. Yeah, I tweeted it. We'll put it on somewhere. But it's like I'm sure you guys have seen it. It was like all over, like, I feel like it sort of went viral. But he looks delighted by the world. Let's put it that way. He looks very, I don't know. Performance-y. It's a very kind of high performance look. I think the first two, though, he was kind of upset and I feel like at other tours and other appearances, they've all seemed pretty much genial and pleasant and excited to be there. This one, you definitely saw them a little bit, both kids kind of stressed out, which totally makes sense, but I feel like it created some kind of unusual photos where you see them like screaming, which Kiara, our photo editor, pointed out is kind of, you feel like maybe the articulation of what Kate or William must feel in these kind of moments, but they can just express it in this kind of visceral way, the kids, by screaming and wailing. So I do kind of like thinking about it that way.
Oh, I love that analysis.
Yeah.
Josh, who was your MVP of the royal family?
I would say George. I think he showed the most character. Even if he wasn't thrilled, you could see it on his face. And then when he was thrilled, you really did see it. So I feel as though, I don't know, he was giving the most, and I enjoyed him. What about you?
I think Charlotte. I've never given a firm handshake in my life, and the fact that she has already mastered that at two is pretty incredible. So they returned right before George's birthday, right?
Yes, and we don't really know how they celebrated, but they released a photo, which was kind of a different kind of photo for them. Kate didn't take it. He has this kind of toothy smile. He looks, you know, as cheerful as ever.
And he has a very chic collarless button-down shirt on.
Yeah.
That was a good look, like a Mandarin collar.
I thought it was a good outfit.
Also, shout out to one of our fans who, did she see Kate and William or did her parents see?
Jessica Michelle wrote us, my coworker's parents are in Germany on vacay and just saw Will and Kate. And she attaches a picture of Kate in this light blue and white striped casual shirt next to William, very close up. So her coworker's parents really got in there. And we asked if she had anything to share about seeing them or what they were like. And she said, not really. They were really nervous because such a large crowd formed. So they took the
pic. Which I love any, you know, first, second hand, third hand, you know, brush with Kate and William. We love getting these messages, so thank you for sending that.
Also, the fact that the coworkers' parents were overwhelmed by the crowd, I can only imagine how Kate and William felt. They can't run after getting the pick. As we mentioned earlier, I went to Midtown today to chat with Lily Collins, who is in a new Amazon show called The Last Tycoon, based on the Fitzgerald book, which comes out very shortly, a few days after you'll be listening to this podcast on Amazon. She also has a lot going on because she's in two films on Netflix right now, Okja and To the Bone. And she recently wrote a book as well. So we had a whole lot to talk about. As Julie mentioned earlier, she had an amazing Tilda Swinton story, who's her co-star from Okja. She also had a great, because it's an In the Limelight interview, we had to ask about her feelings about the royals. And she actually was born in London and grew up there. So she said she still feels like a UK resident in some ways, and it feels like home to her. So she talked about actually having met Charles and Diana when she was a little kid and what that was like. So that was also kind of interesting. And yeah, we also talked a bit about her acting icons and her working with Kelsey Grammer and Matt Bomer on Last Tycoon. She had some fun stories to share about both of them. So yeah, we're going to toss it to that interview that we recorded earlier in the week now. Really excited to be here.
Yes.
Collins.
Woo!
On a very special Vanity Fair in the Limelight segment. We're so thrilled to have you. Thanks for making the
Thanks
time.
Thanks for having me.
I know
me.
You came right from Europe yesterday for the... You know,
yes, just for this. Yeah. No, I'm a little bit jet lagged, yeah. but you got to roll with it.
How was Europe? Did you enjoy your time
gorgeous.
There?
Gorgeous. I was on the Amalfi Coast. I'd never been there, and it was just stunning. I mean, you've seen pictures... And it's like, that's exactly what it's like. So
it's
I feel
like a
very,
postcard.
Yeah, literally like I was taking a bunch of postcards, but it was picturesque and now I'm here. So it's a bit of a shock, but I'm here and loving
Unfortunately,
it.
Unfortunately, yeah, the Amalfi Coast view is not quite the same as
no,
the
No, and it's
town,
also raining like here, which I'm shocked
right,
about.
Right, they're adding like insult to injury or something.
It's
or whatever.
It's true.
So Last Tycoon, over the weekend, I like kept clicking at the end of each episode to watch the next, which I feel like is the sign that a show has already got you hooked.
Yes.
It's like beautiful. It's really just kind of special.
Thank you.
Can you talk about how the project first came to you? What made you say, like, this is something I want to be a part of?
Yeah. You know, I never really considered doing proper TV until recently. And really, it was this script that came across my computer, and it was only the pilot. But Billy Ray was directing it and had written it, and he was going to show run the show if it got picked up. And that pedigree was enough to just get me in the room. And I had read the book when I was a teenager and thought, wow, that's really interesting, because I knew it was unfinished. And I knew that Celia was a very interesting, multi-layered young woman who was super tenacious, feisty, passionate, naive, all these things. I thought, well, that'd be fun to play. And so, yeah, I met with Billy, and he basically in that room described where he saw my character going in the next 5 or 6 years, and it looked amazing. And, that was it. I went home and thought, this is something I have to fight for. So I went back, and I was the only person to read with him, but I did full hair, makeup and wardrobe, went back in the 1930s and came in and read for him, and that was it.
Was the idea of doing TV something you had to think about? Was it something you were excited about? Because it's obviously a different kind of commitment than signing on to do a feature film.
The cool thing is that it's a limited amount.
Right.
You know, it's not episodic like network TV.
Right.
So it's a shorter amount of dedicated time for shooting. Also shot in Los Angeles, like 10 minutes from my house.
Amazing.
In locations that I grew up going to. But yeah, you know, I had... thought about, I'd auditioned for TV years and years and years ago and not gotten the shows that I had thought I wanted. And then I'd focus on movies. But so many people are moving into TV now because you can expand on a character for so much longer.
Right.
Like, you can show a side to someone only so much within an hour and a half or 2 hours of film. So for me to get to go on all these different adventures as this character that I really loved, you know, is not too dissimilar than hoping to sign on to a franchise. And if you sign on to a franchise, you're going to be doing multiple versions of that character as well. So this was just a different medium.
Totally.
And I love the fact that it was on Amazon, because it was going to be binge watched. And Amazon has such an amazing in-house already, like, publicity and all. It was all
these shows.
And they had already such amazing content. It wasn't like it was the first time being done, and they had such a respect level already. So it was just really cool to be a part of.
So Kelsey Grammer playing your dad is like a fantasy I feel like I had in some other life.
Yeah.
What was that like? Did you know him at all? Was this the first time you had met
him? I forgot that I had met him years and years and years ago. My dad was a huge fan of his, and Kelsey is a huge fan of my dad's. And we were at something together once, and I guess they got introduced, and I met Kelsey.
And I kind of forgot about it. And then when we were on set and I introduced myself for the first time, he goes, no, actually, you know, I met you back with your dad. And he like totally remembered.
Oh, that's amazing.
He like called me kiddo from day one. He just took
that's
on
like
the role.
Exactly how it was.
Yeah, literally, yeah, right? Yeah, yeah. It's like in his voice. And yeah. His energy is infectious. And for someone that's been in this for so many years, you wouldn't, or I didn't assume that he would still have that like childlike excitement every single day. And he even says he likes to surprise himself by like not really knowing what's going to happen that day at work and come in and be like, oh, what are we doing today? Because he wants to keep surprising himself. And that was really refreshing.
Keep it interesting. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And so it would keep it interesting for me, you know, and he's just got this voice that is so commanding, and he's so lovely on set.
You can really tell even just in watching the episodes, he's like just having so much fun and like
so
really,
much fun. Yeah. Loving it, yeah.
So I was talking to Julie, my co-host, who is in LA, so she unfortunately can't be here right now. We were both like, being in love with Matt Bomer must not be that looking at him every day and working opposite with him, you could have worse acting jobs, I imagine.
I mean, it's just a bore every day. No, he's probably the most kind, considerate, zen human being I've ever been around,
yeah.
Let alone worked with. And when you have someone like that, number one on the call sheet, it translates to every single member of the yeah. crew. And so everyone was just happy to be there every day. He was so dedicated to the character, and he was just so supportive of me the whole time. And you know, there are certain scenes that maybe were more sensitive than others, and he always wanted to make sure that he looked out for me first. And he's aware of all those things, and he's just absolutely beautiful, like yes. beautiful like in the 1930s or 2017, like he's just hot.
Did wearing the costumes seemed so fun to me? Is that, I imagine if I was in these costumes, like when I'd had a break during filming, I would just be like constantly taking selfies.
I was like, oh my god, I've got to share for my outfit today. Yeah, you know, because like, Janie Bryant's a complete genius, and she
did Mad Men, right?
She did Mad Men, yeah. And she loves for the undergarments as well as the outer garments to be genuine, which is not always the most comfortable. Yeah, not so comfortable. Yeah. Like I like got to kind of, you know, collaborate a little bit on that. But it was a joy to dress like Celia every day with all of her hats and, you know, and then the hair and makeup on top of that. And it just really informed my character from the first fitting. And you'd have fittings for every episode. Because I didn't know what happened in the next episode. You'd read it and go, we go where or what party or this or that. Yeah. And so then she'd say, well, these are your options for your party dresses. And a lot of the times there would be things that I was like, I don't know if that's going to work on me. And she's like, just trust me. And I put it on and I would be wowed because she got it and I didn't.
She knew.
Yeah, proportions and patterns and colors and just things I never knew and also just wouldn't have guessed for myself. But it worked.
Did you, obviously, you know, she's in the 1930s, it's a very different kind of gender landscape than we have now, but it felt to me there were sort of these strange modern parallels to certain things about Celia kind of trying to figure out her way and like navigate this kind of workplace. Did you kind of see that at all when you were working on this? That it, like, strangely, even though this was taking place so long ago, these kind of modern resonances to what she's kind of dealing with?
For sure. You know, I think that she's trying to step outside her dad's shadow.
Right.
She's trying to do more than what women were normally doing of the time. She's also very young. So I think that for her, it's as much as it is that she's a woman, it's also her age that people want to take her seriously.
Yeah.
And also the fact that everyone on the lot knows she's been in love with Matt Bomer's character, Monroe Starr, since she was a baby. So the idea that she's now like working for him, people don't really take her seriously.
Yeah.
So she's got a lot going against her, but then when she starts to pick up steam, people start taking her seriously. But you know what? I want to produce, direct, and write one day. And so playing Celia was a little bit like school because I got to kind of see how it's done in a way, even though it's done differently now. And I feel like now it's easier for women to get things made if they don't find the material out that they like. But I also love the perspective that Celia is not an actress and doesn't want to be an actress at all. She's like, I want to be behind the camera controlling things. And I love that. She's like, she's so spunky.
All the Bennington College stuff was cracking me up.
Right.
It's just like these funny, it's like this idea. I mean, like, remember exactly what that feels like in college when you want to do every, you know, you, it's, and she
and
does
you think
it.
You can. Yeah, exactly.
So how do you, when you're like telling your friends or like talking about the show, like what do you kind of use as the pit? Like what do you usually say to people about what they're going to kind of find here that's going to be kind of fun and exciting?
Well, I say that it's, you know, about the golden age of Hollywood and it shows the glitz and glam that we all think we know so well, but then it dives deeper into the darkness and the destruction of the time. And it really shows how interconnected politics, society, whether it's, you know, Nazi Germany and the Great Depression and film. I mean, how everything is so interconnected.
Yeah.
And I think I knew that studying history, obviously, but not to the extent that I know it now, and how they really impacted the films that were being made and what couldn't get made, and the hardships of the time and social status and all that. So it's really a beautiful show to watch, but it's showing you a side that I don't think we've been able to see before in an entertaining way. I mean, who doesn't want to watch something with, you know, beautiful sets and costumes and hair and makeup that also is like edgy and really provocative for the period, but completely true to the period.
Yeah. Can I ask about To the Bone? I watched it like a week ago with my mom, and we both still are like emailing each other about now that it's out on Netflix and it's out there, have you kind of gotten a sense of what the response has been to the film yet? If you kind of heard anything or read anything?
Yeah, you know, I've actually been following a lot on Instagram and Twitter and social media, and it's been incredible to see the amount of young people coming out and sharing their own stories now as well, and really relating to the subject matter and doing videos or just posting, you know, letters or comments or their stories. And that's what I could have hoped for, is that, you know, like I had said this before, but Marty and I aren't starting this conversation. We're just hoping to make it louder, to be able to take a topic like this and have it spread like wildfire. Even if there's some provocative conversation going on with it, I think is a really important thing. And I feel really proud to be, you know, a part of that conversation and to have it in some way empower people to share their stories and to either maybe seek help if they need it. You know, we partner with Project Heal, so they're a really good resource. I'm not an expert. I'm someone who went through this, and everyone's recovery and journey is different, but this is one story who hopefully will inspire others, and I'm really proud of it.
Yeah, it's so kind of interesting too, because it has this lighthearted, it's so funny too. It's like such an interesting way of kind of communicating this serious topic. You know, there's a lot going on. It's really kind of
amazing. Thank you. I think you need, like in life, it's cheesy, but it's true. You need the lightness to support the darkness and vice versa.
It's interesting to be watching this and then Last Tycoon and thinking about how I cannot imagine two just kind of different kinds of characters to be playing. Was that kind of... Is that what you love about acting? Is it challenging to do that kind of thing? Is it like...
It's challenging, but at the same time, it's so fulfilling because I get to play with different parts of myself.
Yes.
I mean, last year was crazy. I shot the pilot for Tycoon, and then 2 weeks later did To the Bone, which was like a 28-day shoot or 23-day shoot. And then I had about 2 weeks, and then went off to Korea to shoot Okja. Then I had about 2-3 weeks, if that, to go off to the Republic of Georgia to shoot a film called Halo of Stars. Then I came back to LA, started doing press for Rules Don't Apply. Then in January started the entire series. So everything happened back.
I'm lucky if I like one, I take a step. Like,
oh, and I wrote the book in the meantime. I was forced to not have that much time in between each character. Mm. And so that was interesting in and of itself.
Yeah.
But at least for me, with To the Bone and the series, they were about a year apart.
Oh, interesting.
A little bit, you know.
I forget because things come out at the same time.
I know, because usually they don't come out back to back to back in like 2 months.
Yeah.
But I had enough time to separate because...
Do you have anything you're like binging now, or pop culture obsessions or things that you...
Oh, God, it's so embarrassing, but I love all the Bravo shows.
Are you kidding?
Like all the Real Housewives?
Yeah, that's embarrassing.
Top Chef.
Do you have a favorite Housewives?
I like New York and OC.
Yeah.
I'm very excited because OC just started again.
Oh, I know.
So exciting.
I'm behind on that. That's the best, though, for just like a Sunday when you want to just...
Oh, it's just so great.
Yeah.
It's so great. But I've also been binging Younger.
I need to watch it.
I was told so many times that it was so great, so I've been binging that. And obviously, like, love Downton Abbey, love Game of Thrones, so that's already done and watched. But I'm a binger. Like, honestly, I have to have it all there in case I have time to watch more.
Right.
Because gone are the days of, like, TGIF Fridays when it would be, like, you had to wait a week. Or, like, Seventh Heaven on Monday nights.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, what do you mean? What happened? They got, like, expelled. And then you have to, like, wait a week.
No, I know. It's like, I want it now. I don't want to have to wait.
No.
And I forget what's happening. When
I know. That's
I'm
the
like,
thing.
I have to go back and, like, look
like Big Little Lies I loved.
Oh,
so, like, I watched that all at once when they had all come out. And, like, you know, limited series are great.
Yes. Do you, like... I mean, you just went through your list of things that you've kind of done in the past, even just year. Like, do you have kind of look forward to goals in the future in a very specific way? Do you take things kind of case by case? Like, what do you have a sense of, like, I want to be here in a year or anything like that?
No, I don't have that. I don't have time increments, but I do have like a list of things I'd like to do. And that includes work as well as like travel, as well as just life in general. Like, would love to do a flat out comedy, like love Paul Feig. Love to do a British sweeping period drama a la like a Joe Wright situation. Would love to have kids.
Yeah.
Would love to go travel to Thailand and stay in a treehouse. Like,
I like the diversity of this list. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like,
I'd love to
learn how to bake better. There's a lot of cool things that I think that I have in my mind is like, oh, that would be a nice thing to do. But I don't have like by next year, you know, this must happen. Because I think that when you do that, then if it doesn't happen, you get upset about it.
Yeah.
Whereas I could never have planned last year that all that would happen. And like when I set out to write my book, I did it. It came out of a place of like, all right, well, I'm not filming anything, so I want to do something with my time. So I'll write this book. And then 2 weeks later, I booked 3 movies back to back. And I went...
You're like,
crap.
What?
Like, yeah. Now I have to do this all at once. And they said, you can postpone the book. And I was like, mm-mm. Something's telling me that they're going to mimic each other, which ironically, the timing of it all coming out was that, you know, I wrote about subject matter that I was acting, which it just was bizarre.
But I also think that's the best when you're busy, when you have a lot of different things happening. And I feel like it always kind of converges like that.
Well, when your life's mission and the mission of a project combine like that, I think that's when magic happens. Yeah. And that was one of those moments that I happened to have.
Are you someone that has like actress role model types or people that you grew like that you always think about like when you grew up, like that's someone where if I could be in any way emulating what they went through, that would be kind of really amazing.
I mean Audrey Hepburn, but you know, but Meryl Streep. It's about like the longevity of their careers, I think, you know, and Natalie Portman.
Yeah.
Cate Blanchett, Penelope Cruz. Love Penelope Cruz.
Love Penelope.
And all these women are mothers.
Oh, interesting.
You know, and what I love is that they are proof that you can do both, that you can have both, that you can have a career and do what you do and then have your family as well. And some of them also, I mean, Natalie acted very, very young, but most of them kind of hit it a little bit later than now, you would assume, because a lot of people now start so young and then, you know, their careers feel like they should be over by the time they're 21.
Yeah.
Whereas a lot of the films that we consider the greatest hits or their like coming out party, they were in their late 20s, which is like gives you hope. I'm like, oh, cool, great. She started a little later. I think I'm okay, you know.
No,
but it's inspiring.
It's good to remember that, yeah. Do you, and when you meet people, I know when I meet like heroes or icons, it can be like very stressful. Is that something that has been fun for you when you meet these actors? I'm sure you've gotten the chance to meet some of these actresses. Is that
I freak out?
Yeah. Is that like do you
internally
blackout? I always do like a blackout thing where.
Oh yeah, when I
I'm sure you're cooler than me.
Well, no, when I met Meryl Streep for the first time, when I saw her, I like shortness of breath.
Yeah.
And then I shook her hand and I had goosebumps everywhere and I literally started crying and I didn't know what to say, so I said, I usually know what to say, but I don't know what to say. And I just think that we'd have the most fun working together. And she said, oh, we would, wouldn't we? We'd have so much fun. And I said, I just love you. I just really respect you. Well, you should tell my daughters that. And it was the coolest moment. I was like, oh my God, okay. You know, note to self. And then the next time when I saw her and she actually remembered me, it was like, but it's like those are moments that I write about in my journal and will never forget. And I geek out over because it's someone that I truly admire. And you never want those situations to go badly because you heard stories about that when people that you love are just
horrible, or they don't pan
out to be exactly what you would expect. Not everyone can be what you expect, but cordial is one thing.
Yeah. I have to ask about Tilda Swinton, who's an Oakjoy.
Obviously.
Because I just feel like that I would be remiss if I left without asking. But she is kind of enigmatic and mysterious and wonderful in person as you would think she would be. Do you have any stories about like meeting anything?
Yeah, she's amazing. So I didn't get to actually ever shoot with her
on set
because the way that the film works and how Dr. Bong works. But I met her for the first time. Actually, I met her years ago at a fashion show, but for the first time on this movie, I had a day off of work. We were in New York City. We were on Wall Street. And I was walking out of the hotel, and I saw her finishing work getting out of the van. And she had a big bag of trash. And she just, like, was taking her trash out to this massively packed trash can. And I was like, she's taking her own trash out. And I looked at her, and I was like, Tilda, I'm red. I'm playing red with my red hair. And she's like, of course you are. I know who you are. And she gave me a hug. And I was like, what are you doing? She's like, I'm just taking my trash out. And I was like, this, like, random, but, like, so wonderful.
I love
and then that was my
that.
Only interaction I had with her on the set. And then during press, during Cannes, she just kept, like, she just talked to me all the time and explained what was going on because I'd never been to Cannes. And I remember that last night we had a dinner and she just looks at me and she holds my hand and she sits me down and she goes, now, Lily, just tell me everything. Tell me everything about you. Start from the beginning.
Did you turn to Stan?
And I was like, where do I begin? And she just, for like 2 hours, we just sat next to each other and just chatted about anything and everything, things that I enjoy, my favorite color, projects that I like, life, you know, relationships.
Oh my God.
Scotland,
Lily,
England.
That's a dream.
It was a dream.
Does she, like, I feel like she mostly give the best advice, too. I feel
so
like
cool.
Anything
yeah.
she would say, I would just be like, I'm doing this immediately.
Yeah, exactly.
She'd, like, move to New Zealand.
Fashion
like,
sense. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Fashion yeah. sense, hair sense, environmentally, with your job, with your kids, whatever. I was just like, tell me everything.
Yeah.
Let me in.
This is kind of unrelated, but I feel like I have to ask Andrea from London, and we're, like, very big Royals people on this podcast. And
yeah.
I'm interested if you, we talk about, like, Kate Middleton, Meghan Markle, the whole thing. Have you met any of them? Is that, do you follow the royal family at all? Is that something?
I feel very close to England.
Yes.
So I really do feel British at heart. So I like following a lot of that.
Yeah.
I remember setting my TiVo at the time to wake me up in the middle of the night to watch the royal wedding.
Yeah.
Yeah, I watched it at my house and I recorded it and I wanted to be a part of that history making, you know, moment. Yeah, I follow it, but also being here, it's hard to follow it as if you were in England,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah, yeah.
But I met the family, but when I was like barely walking. I mean, there are photos of me giving Princess Diana flowers and then trying to take them back from her, you know? And then like, apparently I was told that Prince Charles like gave me a phone to play with and I proceeded to try to smack him with it, you know?
That's
and my mom was like, oh my God, we're going to get kicked out.
It'd be amazing if like the queen had to come out and like,
literally like,
you give
it back for Mammy. Yeah. Yeah. This child is not welcome. So I do feel very, like, connected and like been going to England. I love going to England so much and reading all about that and just I'm fascinated. I always will be with the history of that.
Is London where you like at this point feel like home? Is LA home? Is like do you...
When I go to England for Christmas, I go to the countryside house that I grew up in and I say that I'm going home. Then when I'm done with my trip, I say I'm going home to LA. So it's
very really
much both. But I do see myself always having a place in England. And I love the countryside because it's just so calming and different.
Yeah.
And I see my kids spending time there in the future. So it's just, I can't lose that part of me.
Yeah. Having both seems nice.
Yeah. It's a good balance, I think.
Well, Lily, thank you so much for taking the time. This
thank
was so
you.
Fun. Really rapid fire, wide
yes,
ranging.
Yes, rapid
for
fire.
Everything. We
of
really
course.
Appreciate it. Thanks so much.
So that does it for this week's episode of In the Limelight. Thank you so much for listening. And please remember to rate, review us on Apple Podcasts. Let us know what you thought of the Royal Tour and what you would do if you came across Brad or Beyonce at a music festival.
Also, feel free to reach out to us on Twitter at In the Limelight to further discuss these subjects. You can also follow us individually. I'm at Julie W. Miller.
And I'm at J. Duboff. We also have Instagram, In the Limelight Pod. This episode was edited and produced by Jordan Bell. Thanks to Andy Bowers at Panoply. Thanks for joining us. We'll talk to you next week. And until then, no bad energy.